I can hear you a bit now, I think. Can you hear me?
I think somebody else is interfering with this. That fallen Baran.
Broken up. I could only hear about a third of that. I only got Sony's interfering is all I heard. Can you hear that?
Can you hear me at all?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'm seldom in Skype, and that fellow in Beiran is trying to get a hold of me. I think it's interrupting what little connection I have.
All right.
Anyway.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Notice I can send emails back and forth, but as soon as I start talking to you, I get knocked off the line?
Yeah, well, it was the last few times, yeah. If it's any better now.
I checked to see what was going on with the Department of National Defense.
Right.
Because they're the ones listening to my communications, you understand?
Right.
And I sent you an email just now, and I said, check this out. He openly brags of treason.
Yeah.
And just since last night, that crazy bastard posted twice, not once, but twice, where he was one of 24 officers that went to Southern Command Tampa to plot to go to war with Iraq in 2002.
Yeah.
And he even published the email that I sent. He published the email I sent to the Minister of Defense and the boss of the Princess Patricia Light Infantry. He openly published it.
Amazing.
Why on earth would he do that?
Amazing stuff.
Did you get my last email? Click on the link.
Yeah, I've clicked on the link. I'm just clicking, I'm just looking at it. I'm just, you've said this before, but to see this sort of trash on Blogger, they would normally delete this type of blog completely.
Oh, that's about plotting to go to war with Iraq in 2002.
Right.
Like, if he is truly a major, was a major in the Princess Patricia Light Infantry and went to Tampa to help Americans plot to go to war with Iraq in 2002, he just violated some serious oaths.
Yeah.
I'm addressing it to a lieutenant colonel of the Princess Patricia Light Infantry, Arrington, in his town. I've talked to him. I've dealt with the Minister of Defense and the opposition and said, I know Canadian troops were in Iraq, even though that we weren't part of the Coalition of the Willing, right?
Right.
I even know a guy that was a sniper.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Now, it's called the Minister of Defense, not attack.
You're right.
What the hell are we sending our top officers to Southern Command to plot to go to war with a country that never attacked us?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Now your country, England, was part of the Coalition of the Willing.
Oh, yeah.
Canada was not.
Yeah.
But we were.
Yeah.
Covertly. You understand?
Oh, yeah.
Now, remember me bitching about Brigitte Johnstadter?
I do remember, yes.
I gave that shit to her and fucking Julian Assange a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then WikiLeaks released some diplomatic documents in 2011.
Right.
That supported what I've been bitching about since 2009.
Yeah, I'm familiar, yeah.
And even CBC quoted the from the WikiLeaks releases.
Yeah.
and wrote an article about it. And this was 2 years after I was complaining to the military police. Right? You understand what I'm talking? Right?
Now, amazing.
Now, here's something even more amazing. Our prime minister and our minister of foreign affairs were over at the G20 meeting in Russia. Right?
Yeah.
They were the only ones supporting Obama to attack Syria. Now,
right.
even Cameron had lost a vote in your parliament.
That's right.
And they were singing, they were backing Obama going, let's go, right?
Yeah.
And the only guy talking any sense was Putnam saying, back off, calm down, right?
Yeah.
You understand?
Right.
Now, back in 2005, a lot of people aren't aware of this, but the whole idea of G20 meetings was the idea of the Canadian Prime Minister, Pierre Trudeau.
Okay? Right.
And the only way he could become a big cheese in the UN was to get rid of the mandate of the Bank of Canada and join the IMF, and now we're debt slaves, right?
Right.
But that allowed him to be a big cheese in the UN, so he said, let's have G20 meetings where we take all our bank governors and our finance ministers, and they'll meet for economic powwows, right? That was
yep.
the idea of the G20s?
Yep.
So in 2005, I sent every member of the G20s a hard copy, about 700 documents and a CD. The only people that took any interest in me were the Cubans and the Brazilians. The Cubans called me and the Brazilians faxed me, okay?
Right.
So anyway, as I hear this possibility of attacking Syria, which there is no winning, I'm having deja vu about Iraq.
Mm.
So I call all the G20 people that are important while they're spitting and chewing in Russia. Right?
Right.
So I called the German embassies, the German embassies in the UN, the Chinese, not the Chinese, the Japanese, etc.
Right.
There was just so much time in the day, and I just... So I called the Brazilians, and I said, listen, this was sent signature required. I got your signature. Who's got my document? They're denying everything, okay?
Yeah.
And I said, listen, you got a new president, not a bad-looking woman, and Brazil is one of the few countries that doesn't play with the IMF.
Yeah.
Okay? If anybody should listen to me, it's your president. She's at the G20, and the crazy bastards are talking about war. And I sent you guys all the same stuff, and I got your signature. So this idiot named Bruno in the UN for Brazil, he's playing dumb. He says, well, this is a matter for the embassy in Washington. I said, no. It's a matter for the embassy in the UN because you're G20 and I sent stuff to you. I didn't send it to the embassy in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I didn't send it to them. I sent it to you. Who's got the file? Call your president. Call. And he wouldn't do nothing. So anyway, I emailed the president's office or legal department.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got on the phone to Washington and I asked to speak to some diplomat that understands money. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, the ladies that answer the phone, they direct me to this guy, and I just get voicemail. I leave a voicemail, right? I get back on the phone, and I said, listen, it's close to quitting time, and your president's over in Russia, and they're talking about war, and I need to talk to somebody in the embassy. Who do you suggest I talk to? And the girl says, what's this about? Now, she's an American girl by her accent, who's just answering the phones for the embassy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell her, and she's listening, and she's checking. I said, well, you're in America. And she goes, yeah. And I said, you're in Washington. She said, yeah. I said, have a look at this missing hearing, the missing transcript, the missing webcast. And I said, have a look at here where you can see that I must have been involved. And I sent this stuff to your embassy in the UN in 2005 before I ran. Anyway, she's checking all this, right?
Yeah.
And she's listening, understands, we're conversing, she's going, I can see where she's hitting websites on the web. The line goes dead.
Wow.
Now, I had a strong connection, and we were talking on Magic Deck. I call back immediately. Okay?
Yeah.
And I say to the, I say, may I speak to the young lady I was just speaking to? And the girl says, well, there's five of us here. And I said, well, she was a young girl with an American accent. Stand up in your cubicle and ask your associates which one was speaking to Dave Amos, right?
Yeah.
So she was gone quite a while. She comes back on and she goes, there was a change of shift and everybody went home. I called back within seconds.
Wow.
So I was very worried about that young lady because I know the NSA and the CSE listen to all calls to all foreign embassies.
Yeah.
Right? So I was very worried about that young girl because I just filled her ear with important shit when there might be a war in Syria. Right?
Right.
So anyway, I go away and then I'm back in the evenings. And this guy from the Brazilian embassy didn't leave me one voicemail. He left me six.
Wow.
That economics guy, right?
Yeah.
So I come back during the daylight talking business hours. Okay?
Yeah.
He and I talked for, you know how I can talk. We talked for about an hour. He understood money. He understood everything I was talking about and checked. Do you understand?
Yeah.
He gave me email addresses. I sent him the copies of the documents that I had sent to his associates in the UN. He believed every single word I said to him. Okay?
Yeah.
He was a nice guy with a name and an email address. The line went dead. Right in the middle of a conversation.
Wow.
Right? I call back. Get voicemail. They shut him down, too.
They've got the whatever system they're using to monitor you, they've got it really, you know, ready to rock and roll at seconds notice.
Well, look what's happening just now, Andrew.
Yeah.
There are no coincidences. I couldn't talk to you, so I send you some emails to back you up.
Yeah.
And now they want to listen to what we're talking about.
I guess.
There are no coincidences.
No, not with stuff like this.
You know, you know I'm not making it up.
No, I know you're not.
It's like real strange times, buddy. I'll
just say what I always say when it comes to them listening to me. I hope the bloody are listening, and I hope that whoever these people are, they actually make sure they're on the right side, because we're not the enemy.
No, I have fans inside the feds. Not everybody's evil. You understand?
Good. Well, I'm not accusing them of, but you know, they're probably just doing their jobs, but. You know, when is a job worth it, you know?
Well, they're all chicken shits.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it?
They got mortgages and kids.
True.
That is it.
I think you that's know, largely it.
It's no great worldwide conspiracy. It's like they're sheep.
I know, but they're sheep for somebody else, though. They're not sheep for themselves. You know,
no.
I mean...
But they don't give a rat's ass.
No, I know.
It's like that, remember the Traveling Wilburys with George Harrison and Dylan?
Right.
Do you remember the song Tweeter and the Monkey Man?
No, I don't remember that.
There's a favorite line in that song. I love the Traveling Wilburys. Anyway, it was Tweeter and the Monkey Man were hired up for cash. They stayed up all night dealing cocaine and hash. To an undercover cop who had a sister named Jan, for reasons unexplained, she loved the Monkey Man, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a great tune, but here's the best line in it. Tweeter was a Boy Scout before he went to Vietnam and found out the hard way, nobody gives a damn.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is the awful truth of it, right? I'll stand here in the yard and I'll point at the planes going over spraying chemtrails.
Yeah.
They'll be like four abreast, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going, look at the other jets. And there's the flight paths for the jets going to Toronto and New York, right? I said, these are off the given flight paths. The other jets aren't leaving these fucking trails that these ones are. I said, think about that 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know you have an interest in chemtrails, and I don't pretend to know the first thing about it, and everybody else can study it and talk about it, but I can stand out in the yard and see them fly over.
That's right.
You know, at least I'm aware of it, but I ain't, there's so much time in the day. You know what I mean? Right? And yeah. Nobody believes me in what I say with documentation. Or the lack thereof. You ask people, like I asked the guy in Brazil, I said, ask yourself a simple question. And he said, what's that? I said, how could a hearing from the U.S. Senate Banking Committee about the financial industry go missing and nobody give a damn?
Yeah.
Right? And then I said, check what I'm saying is true. Go over to C-SPAN, where they have their own library, and it's missing from there, too. I said, there's your double check. Could it be that I'm telling you is important, that they want it gone?
Right? Yeah.
And I know people aren't stupid. I know they understand what I'm talking about, even though I talk funny and kind of strict with them. It's like, man, how they're not stupid. They're chicken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying everybody's evil, right? But it's just like, man, there's a hard rain going to fall. I feel like the fool on the hill crowing and crowing and nobody gives a damn.
Yeah.
But anyway, that said, Werner Bach, I found it very curious. He was on trial for a year. And then in June, it came to an end and there was nothing in the media. So I was down to see a friend of mine. And I said, do you know what happened in Werner Bach's trial? And he said, well, it was in the front page of the local paper, but you can't read the local paper on the internet, right?
Yeah.
So he pulled it out of the wood pile, and it said that the judge had taken his judgment under advisement, reserved judgment. So there was no outcome.
Hmm.
Okay? So I'm asking a friend of mine who is in a lot of courts, and I'm going, why would the judge do that? And he said he just didn't want it in the media, right? He said he could come out with a judgment the following day, just, you know, put it in mail or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I go, oh, I see. Because there was nothing in the media since I pounced on the matter, you understand? And anyway, it was very strange. I swear I'm spooky, Andrew. I swear I am. Hmm. So all summer long, I was infinitely curious as to what happened with the Werner Bach matter, because there would be no way to find out, right?
Right, right.
So I found this old clock radio in the back of a junk truck.
Yeah.
And my old faithful radio had died, so I got this clock radio. And I plug it in my hole in the wall, and every time the power goes out, the clock goes out. Now, I got tired of resetting it, so it sits there and flashes at 12, 12, 12, right?
Yeah.
So, whatever the clock radio function does, it depends on the clock, right?
Of course.
Well, every day at about 4:30 in the afternoon, that fucking radio will turn on.
Yeah.
Even though it's showing 12, 12, 12,
yeah.
Right? I have no idea why, right?
Yeah.
But every time it does it, and I don't think it does it every day, you know, that, come to think of it. But whenever it does it, it scares the shit out of me. Because I'll be sitting there reading or writing on my computer, and all of a sudden the radio will come on right beside me, kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I can picture the scene.
Yeah. So anyway, here... I think it was Thursday. Yeah, I believe it was Thursday. Bing, the radio comes on, and it's CBC.
Yeah.
And what they're saying as soon as the radio comes on is about Werner Bach being in court And the judge wanting to commit him to the loony bin, and him saying that he was a German immigrant and he wanted to call his embassy. So the sheriff arrested him and took him out in cuffs, and he's due back in court on Monday.
Yeah.
I'm going, wow. Right? So that evening I go out and I deal with it, because even though I don't side with Werner Bock because of his Nazi bullshit, he does not abuse his cattle, right? So anyway, that said, I deal with it, but I'm looking on the internet and there's not, CBC has no reports, nothing. So all I got is what I heard through my funny radio, and I swear I wasn't dreaming, right?
Right.
But I had no way to back it up by news reports. You think CBC would put something on the fucking news? They'd put something in their channel too, right?
Yeah, you would thought, yeah.
And I couldn't download the newscast, the podcast, couldn't find it, right? So I'm going, I don't know if I was dreaming or not, you know what I mean? But I swear that radio come on and said that, right?
Right.
So anyway, last night, CBC put it on their webpage.
Mm.
And I put that in the email that I sent you.
Okay.
Right? So now I got digital proof because I thought, fuck, am I losing it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean, right?
That is weird, yeah. Absolutely.
It was like real strange. So anyway, I'm battling the cops, Al West and Crooked. I'm battling the bankers. I'm battling everybody. And then they put Werner Bock in the loony bin. Now, they've done that to me twice.
Right.
They put Byron Pryor in for 9 months. Eichel's over in Ottawa, and they're fighting about this. And Arthur Thompson's going to court, and Jim Townsend, and then there's all these yo-yos, right?
Yeah.
And I can see. You should look at something. Type in David Amos rant.
Okay. This is one we've had before, I think, in our conversations.
Now, this was a blog site called Justice Done Dirt Cheap.
Right, the David Amos rant.blogspot.
Yeah. Now, that's not my blog.
Right. And
the main blog is called Justice Done Dirt Cheap.
Okay, yep.
And they killed it this summer.
Right.
That blog's dead. My rant is a satellite thereof.
Okay.
Now, he makes fun of me, doesn't want to side with me. If you went to his other parts of the blog, he said he doesn't agree with me, but finds me interesting and provided a spot for me to rant. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, there's two other people that he allows rants to. Sally Brooks rants and Jen Wombolt's rants, right? 2 weeks ago, Jen Wombolt?
Yeah.
She's a mother of three kids, right? She's fighting with the justice system. They put her in the same loony bin they put me, and they put Sally Brooks in the same loony bin, and their friend Evelyn Green. All four of us have been in the same loony bin by the same doctors, just trying to shut us up in Fredericton.
Yep.
Okay?
Right.
And the same police are harassing that Andre Murray guy. Now, they all hate me, right?
Yep.
But that's okay. I say what I want to say, take it or leave it, right?
Yeah.
First they'll ask me for my help, and then they'll stab me in the back. I'm kind of used to it, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, Jen Wombolt, seven men tackled her, stripped her naked.
Wow.
And then they give her twice as much drugs as they should have, and they made her a zombie for about 2 weeks, right? So anyway, she's due to go to court 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So a cop comes right into her house. It's the same cop that was on trial. They spent $250,000 defending him when he kicked him and his bunch of guys ganged up on a soldier and kicked the shit out of him. Broke his back, black eyes, all kinds of shit.
Wow.
And he got off it. The same cop, which is like a psychopath, is inside their house without knocking on the door or nothing. Right?
Yeah.
And her and her husband and her son tackle him, and then he claims he's in a hot pursuit. Do you know what he's in a hot pursuit for?
No.
He saw her 21-year-old son ride up to the house on a bicycle without a helmet on. A $21 fine. Okay?
Wow.
He winds up tasing Jen Womble. Her and her husband are charged with assault against him. She went to jail for 20 days, and her and her husband go back to court, and they might go to jail again.
Wow.
A week later, we're in her box in the loony bin. Would you say I have good reason to be paranoid?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, of course.
Like, they've set me up as a nut anyway, and half the world calls me a nut, right? So all of a sudden, Dave's in the loony bin. Nobody even asked why. Nobody would care.
Well, this is, yeah, this is it.
I'm not in the media. Nobody will ever say my name, right?
Right.
One day, I'd just be gone.
Oh, yeah. I
remember the last time they put me in the loony bin, nobody did a fucking thing. Mm. Friends of mine watched it happen. And people, even friends of mine who know what I'm doing and believe every word I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Don't want involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and then they go, well, Dave, you know, that's your, I can't do anything. I'm just an ordinary guy. And I go, yeah, I understand. Right? I understand. And they're friends. And they are ordinary people. And they don't need the shit to come down on them. And I understand that, right? But they see the cops circling around me. They see the helicopters over top of me. They'll fucking park a helicopter right over top of me trying to spook me. And I'll go get the camera and they'll fuck off. Right?
Yeah.
These people see all this stuff. And they think it's funny. But they know I'm not lying.
Yeah.
And these are people I've known.
Yeah.
For long. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So, you know, if people are chicken at a personal level who know me intentionally well, right?
Yeah.
That damn truck's back. I might lose you because of the truck. But don't you think it's interesting that we've had a good connection?
Right.
And now the truck's there and we're still talking.
Yeah. Huh? Indeed.
I think somebody's nervous. Huh?
Oh, there's definitely a lot of nervous people around, I'll tell you that.
Oh, while I'm talking to you about England there, when you were helpful with my magic jack?
Right.
I had a lot of fun talking to members of Parliament in your country, buddy.
Did you?
Oh, Christ, yeah. Did I tell you about me talking to the people that want an independent Scotland?
No, I don't think you did. I think we touched on it in one of our previous conversations not too long ago. But
I think there's about 8 or 9 of them in your parliament that want an independent Scotland.
Yeah, there was been a move. I mean, I was up in Scotland in May, and there was one of the girls there. She was very keen on the independent Scotland idea, you know, and so she brought it up in conversation.
Yeah, well, there's I think about 9 MPs in Parliament with that mandate. Right?
Right.
And I was like spitting and chewing with the guys, right?
Mm.
Picking a fight. Because I find that picking a fight works better than anything, because then they go, who the fuck was that guy? And then they start Googling me, and then I catch the like members of Parliament trying to figure out who the fuck I was. But I sent them emails anyway, right?
Right.
But then I turned around and I was nice as pie. Because one of them is a real good-looking woman,
yeah,
and a doctor.
All right.
So I called her as assistant in London, and then I turned around and called her constituency assistant in Scotland with
yeah.
your magic jack time.
Yeah.
Right? Too funny. He and I talked and talked, and he checked, and I said, you say hello to the doctor and tell her I think she's a fine-looking woman. It was too funny, man. And then I was, like, talking to, I can't remember their names, but the oppositions to Osborne and stuff. And then I watched them getting a big spit-and-chew with the Royal Bank of Scotland and the chairman of the board and the president cut the axe, right?
Yeah.
And I got all kinds of stuff on Royal Bank of Scotland, UBS, HSBC, just having to do with Iraq and the funny money found in Iraq. Because it was all had to do with a Canadian company. You know what I mean? Are you there?
Yeah, hang on, David, just one second. Have it with your TIs, but not now. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, I was just talking to Isaac, my son.
No, I well understand.
Everyone, sorry. Are you all right?
Yeah, oh yeah, I just thought you
carry
were
on if you want, yeah, as you were. I just need to say, just say something to him that's done now.
Anyway, years and years ago, I told you about all that funny American cash found in Baghdad.
American?
Cash.
Oh, I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, well, after the shock and awe in Baghdad in 2003, they found pallets full of American cash.
Yeah.
The same banking committee in the spring of 2004 covered up where that money come from because there had been an embargo on Iraq since the first Gulf War.
Yeah.
And what's American money, brand new notes, sequential, not in a bank, doing in Iraq? So much money they had to take it away in a C-130 airplane on pallets, right? So anyway, it come out that it was a consortium of banks. UBS was the main player, but Royal Bank of Scotland and HSBC. And it had to do with the UN. And now we're back to the G20 guys and why I sent stuff to the G20 guys. You understand?
Right.
It had to do with a thing they called oil for food.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then there was a big inquiry in it where they picked Paul Volcker to investigate.
Right.
So he was another guy I had tackled in the UN because he was former Secretary of the Treasury or President of the Fed Bank or something. I forget, right?
Right.
So I took him on with the UN guys. This is what I was reminding the guy in Brazil, right? Because he got the same stuff at the same time.
Yeah.
So anyway, what it boiled down to that nobody will talk about, it had to do with a big Canadian company called Power Corp.
Yeah.
Which is one of these companies that is very huge and nobody talks about.
Right.
And Power Corp bought Putnam Investments. And that's what the hearing was about that I inspired.
Right.
They bought Putnam Investments right after they covered up this oil for food shit because they owed people a favor. And Putnam Investments had lost billions of dollars, right?
Wow.
So Power Corp owns Putnam Investments. But anyway, Power Corp owned the oil company in, I think it was based in France, that was trading with Saddam cold cash for oil and supplying food.
Yeah.
So he was getting a huge payoff and he couldn't put in the bank and he wanted it cash. Like real currency.
Wow.
So who got it was the Swiss bank UBS, but your Royal Bank of Scotland was involved, and so was the Hong Kong bank, right? Because the Muslims don't like to pay interest, so they have to use the Hong Kong bank because it doesn't charge usury fees.
Right.
So anyway, they were all involved in it, and UBS, the Swiss bank, because they're so secretive, got the money from the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, brand new notes.
Yeah.
And managed to have it shipped to Iraq in some way. So cold cash come from New York into downtown Baghdad. So these soldiers that are rooting around, the money wasn't in bank. It was like behind hidden walls and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And cold cash. So they had a huge investigation because the U.S. Senate Banking Committee had the investigation. And I saved all this stuff. I could send it to you, but I know you believe me anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, they had this Senate Banking Committee meeting in early 2004. Now, the general counsel for the U.S. Treasury Department was a guy named David Offhauser.
Right.
And I attacked him in 2003 as soon as the Secret Service left my door because he was the general counsel for the Treasury Department, and the Secret Service worked for the Treasury Department. Plus, I was suing three Treasury agents, right?
Right.
So when they tried to take me to Gitmo, I took on the Treasury Department's lawyer, which was a guy named David Alphauser. Okay? And then when I sent him my second pile of stuff, and before that hearing that disappeared,
yeah,
he quit as general counsel of the U.S. Treasury Department. He quit. Wow. Right? So he went into a think tank with a funny name, CSIS, which is the name of our Secret Service. Right?
Right.
That's what we call our Secret Service, CSIS. Same initials. And he goes into this corporate think tank where he can draw a check in Washington called CSIS. So anyway, when after they were all done covering up for UBS and they paid a big fine for shuffling money around into Iraq, right?
Right.
UBS hired David Alphauser, former general counsel of the U.S. Treasury Department, as their global general counsel. Okay? I was aware of that. He was appointed while I was running for parliament. He took the job in the summer of 2004. I called UBS in New York as soon as it was announced that he was going to be their global general counsel.
Yeah.
Talked to their head office in New York, and I said, you got David Alphauser for your general counsel. And they go, yeah. I said, that's a big feather in your cap. They're going, yeah, right? You know Dave? I said, oh, yeah. And they go, "What?" I said, you tell Dave Alphauser, Dave Amos says hi. And they go, what do you mean? And I said, check your email. And I sent them the documents that I'd sent Alphauser years ago.
Yeah.
Now, if you go through where you store my files.
Yeah.
If you go to Cross Border, file called Cross Border.
Yeah. I remember that one.
If you go down to about page 100.
Yeah.
You will see the letters to Alphauser.
Right.
And you can see that they are answered by others. You understand?
Right.
And if you start at the file, you'll see where I served the Fed Bank. I served Ferguson, the lawyer, the co-chair of the Fed Bank, not the face guy, Greenspan, right?
Right.
I served Ferguson. Anyway, so Royal Bank of Scotland, your Queen of England, Royal Dutch Shell, HBC Bank, were all involved with Saddam Hussein and getting fucking oil. While they were starving his country and starving him of food, medical supplies, and everything like that, they were milking him for oil. And,
yep.
And it was all done through a huge Canadian company that nobody's aware of. It's called Power Corp.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? It's like there is a huge global conspiracy, and it's largely a function of money and the people that control the purse strings control the politicians. You know how it works, right?
Yeah.
But the thing about it is I use their documents to expose the truth about them. What I have is news reports, transcripts, what was said in the media or in documents or before courts or before hearings. It's their words, not mine. I just
connect
the dots for them. And then I have my own issues with each of them, right? I don't care about Dave Alphauser being the general counsel. He's just another guy that puts his pants on one leg at a time like me, right? And I crossed paths with him before he was the general counsel of UBS. Mm-hmm. Way back to Werner Bach in the summer of 2008, while he's in the fields raving about his cattle, right?
Right.
He doesn't care that I just came out of the loony bin, right?
Right.
And I predicted that they would try to put us in the loony bin if they could separate us, and they did with me, and he thought it was funny, and I said, not funny, and he says, gallows humor. I said, gallows humor? I said, the hanged man don't find anything funny in your jokes. You know what I mean? So anyway, while he's in the field, and I got the camera on this calf with a big hole in it.
Yeah.
He's raving about the cattle, and I'm talking, and this was August of 2008. David Alphauser was caught by the Attorney General of New York insider trading within UBS. The former General Counsel of the U.S. Treasury Department general counsel of the UBS, don't have enough money, is caught being a crook.
It's amazing. Right?
And you can hear me raving about it on the video as we're standing in the field looking at this poor suffering calf, right?
Yeah, I've watched that video. One of those videos I've watched.
Well, do you remember me saying that?
No, I don't remember saying that, but I remember watching some of the videos.
Well, you can hear me saying it because I wanted the date and the time recorded about what I knew and when, right?
Of course.
And see, they just arrested Spitzer in Washington with the wrong girl, but he was never prosecuted. They put me in the loony bin, right?
Right.
And I might be standing in a field talking to this farmer about a calf, but people should listen very closely to what I'm saying.
Yes.
And I marked the date and time.
Kind of.
So anyway, do you know what David Althauser got for being caught with his hands in the cookie jar?
A golden handshake?
Exactly. And a promise not to do it again.
Mm.
Kept his law license, everything. Just Google his name, David Althauser.
Right.
Google David Althauser and David Amos.
Yeah.
Two crazy bastards. And you'll see that I'm not lying.
Yeah.
Now there's something else that's... back in those times when I was dealing with the UN...
Yeah.
I got this call... You're recording this conversation, I hope.
Yeah, should be recording.
Good. I got this call from a Yankee lawyer. He wouldn't say who he was.
Yeah.
And it was an unlisted number, right?
Yeah.
And this was spring of 2005, okay?
Okay.
And this snobby bastard, he's calling me up, and Yankee accent, couldn't tell from where, he was messing with me. And he says, Mr. Amos. I said, yes, who's this? Oh, can't say. He says, the King of England is mad at you. I said, oh, really? That's funny. I said, what's he doing, rolling in his grave? Like, the dumb bastard didn't know we had a queen, right? You know what I mean? And I go, a lot you know, man, right? And I said, there is no King England. We got a queen. We've had her forever and a day, since I was born almost, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, he said, I got a call from the Prime Minister's office of England. I said, oh, really? I said, do you know who that is? You know, I thought I was dealing with a bullshitter, right?
Yeah.
And he says, is it Blair, some guy named Blair. I said, yeah, Tony Blair. Now, this, I am not making this up, right?
Unbelievable.
He says, Tony Blair's mad at you. I said, why is Tony Blair mad at me? I said, I haven't pissed in his cornflakes yet. Right? So that call inspired me. And I don't know if I sent you my UN file. I think I did. I think I included you when I was sending that some of the embassies there a week or so ago. I think I put you in the BCC line.
I might well have done, yeah.
So there's a file called UN Dudes, right?
Oh, I think I've already got that on my website, haven't I? The title of that file name is familiar to me.
Yeah, but you took a bunch of files and you put them, merged them all together, so they're kind of hard to read.
Ah, okay. Well, maybe I did.
Yeah, but anyway,
I've got it. Yeah, set on. Oh, I got a version of that file that was sent on 10th of July, so that wasn't recently, but that's. Yeah.
Well, just look anyway. At UN. Just look at UN Dudes, okay? Have a look at it.
Right, I'm looking at it.
At the time, in 2005, if you scroll through it, you will see I sent it to Tony Blair. Because at the time, they take turns who's like the president of the European Union.
That's right. Yeah, Blair was president for a while, I know, for 1 year. I think it's every year they change, don't they?
Yeah, well, at the time, he was president of the European Union. So I sent it to him, care of the UN embassy for the European Union. You can see the proof of it there.
Yeah.
And I sent a whole pile of documents and a CD... and they received it signature required. That's when I pissed in Tony Blair's cornflakes.
Right.
Right? But it was that call that caused me to do it. Right?
Yeah.
But I'm going, of all, you know, I talk to people courtesy of you and the Magic Jack. I remember I was talking to a woman in Norway. They got their defense department. They're part of NATO.
Yeah.
And Norway's got too much money because of oil and stuff.
Yeah.
And they think they're also rich and ethical and they're just a bunch of crooks, but they're part of NATO, right?
Right.
And I noticed they even have the same name for their spies that we do. They call it the Defense Research Establishment.
Right.
And I see these guys checking out my work on the internet, and it's called Defense Research Establishment, which is what it's called in Canada, because it's all part NATO and stuff, right?
Yeah, it's similar in the UK. We've got I think, Defense Research Agency, so it's DERA.
Yeah. When I first saw it, I thought it was our guys checking me out. And then I noticed it was not our guys, it was Norway.
Yeah.
So courtesy of my magic little magic jack, I call.
Yeah.
Right while they're looking at me. Right? And I got to this woman on the phone. And I sent her an email. And I said, ma'am, David Amos. She goes, yes, Mr. Amos. I said, do you know who I am? She goes, yes, Mr. Amos, I do. I said, thank you for being honest. Are you the one that's looking at me right now on the, checking my work? And she said, yes. So what do you think? And she said, no comment, right? I said, guess who I'm going to call next? She said, who? I said, your prime minister's office. And I did.
Mm.
And I sent them all emails. Now, Norway, they stick their nose in Canada's affairs all the time.
Right.
Like, they're big in salmon farming.
Yep.
Well, they've set salmon farms up all over British Columbia, and they're starting in the Maritimes now. And their goddamn farms kill our natural stock.
Ah.
And then they turn around and they stick their hand out to our governments and our politicians, give them money so they can kill off our natural resources while they make money. You know what I'm saying? And our Minister of Fisheries, a couple of years ago, he's got cancer. First he had a heart attack, now he's got cancer, is Keith Ashfield. And before him was Dominic LeBlanc. Now these guys all know me, like we're all like Maritimers. Like Keith Ashfield was in my graduating class in high school. And Keith Ashfield was dumb as a post then and ain't got any brighter, right? So they gave him a relatively simple portfolio, Minister of Fisheries, because we hardly fish anymore. They closed the Grand Banks down and stuff, right?
Yep.
So he's got a portfolio that's got little or nothing to do. So you hear very little of Keith Ashfield in the media when he was Minister of Fisheries and Oceans, right? Because, like, all the rivers and streams are within provincial jurisdiction, and he's a federal minister, you understand?
Yeah.
However, he was all over the news in Norway, all the time. Norwegian reporters would fly way over to British Columbia and follow him around, film him, and put him on Norwegian TV. Because there was this British guy who was coming over and protesting salmon farming in BC and supporting the Indians over here.
Mm-hmm.
So he wound up getting sued, prosecuted, and booted out of Canada.
Wow.
A Brit, right? One of these activists.
Yeah.
Like Greenpeace, only for salmon, right?
Right.
He's a Brit.
Pink peas, then.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. Anyway, he went through all the courts, all the bullshit artists supported him, and then he prosecuted. He got booted out of the country, right?
Right.
The Norwegians are following because it affects their money, and there's a bunch of environmental activists in Norway, too, right?
Yeah.
to testing the salmon farms in Norway. I've talked to them, sent them emails. I've picked up the phone and talked to them, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that Brit went from British Columbia to Norway. I think if you type in, I think they call it Salmon Wars. I think you'll see quite a bit about it.
Right.
But they'll show, like, Keith Ashfield on the news in Norway and everything, right? But he lives, like, about 5 miles from where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah.
And, like, Norway on another issue. You remember I was involved with BHP and them trying to buy Potash Corp?
Yeah.
Well, at about the same time, Norway, which has too much money, by the way, there's whole towns in Norway that lost all their pension money to Madoff.
Oh, yeah.
And they wouldn't do nothing about that in 2009, right?
Right.
But anyway, Norway, I think it was 2011, 2012, want to appear so ethical, and they know so much about money and how to involve. They know the financial industry inside out backwards. They're so wealthy, right? So they're rising the rest of the world. Well, now that we got enough money, we should start being ethical.
Right.
So they were advising the world not to buy shares in Potash Corp.
Yeah.
Want to know why?
Tell me.
Well, one of their subsidiary companies deals in phosphate.
Yep.
Phosphate they get from seashells.
Yep.
And there's an old ocean bed in northern Africa.
Yep.
So they mine the seashells to get the phosphates, and they say that Potash Corp are abusing the locals because there's no established government, so they're getting that natural resources for free. They're raping the land and nobody's being compensated.
Yep.
I come back at Norway, right? And I'm going, the reason you guys are so rich in the first place is the fucking oil industry. Right?
Yeah.
You know? And they send their drilling rigs all over the world.
Yeah.
They don't drill in the North Sea, right? And it was the Ocean Ranger that sunk all hands years ago. It was a Norwegian ship.
Yeah.
Furthermore, it was a Norwegian ship called the Pelerin that was drilling off the coast of Labrador in the summer of 81. They had a bullet they couldn't plug and killed all our fucking fish. Some ethical you fucking Norwegians are.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see me and the Prime Minister got issues.
Right.
Like, I'd give a rat's ass about Norway when I'm taking on Obama and the boys. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But there's the awful truth, and let it ride. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I provide the documentation of what I'm saying is true.
I know.
And it's all, they just all, nobody knows what I'm talking about. And I'm going, you're the guys that write all this shit like you're all knowing. I'm telling you in 10 minutes what I know, and you don't believe me, and yet I'm providing documentation. What are you providing for documentation of what you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm looking at all this, and I'm going, wow, right? And did you, I sent some small sound files to you. I hope you paid attention to them. I thought you'd get a kick out of them, if only to tease that Colostrum guy.
Oh, right. Yeah, I think, I did see you sent them. I don't think I listened, though, so I'll have to go back and listen.
I called them the seventh candidate.
Right, okay. I think I did. I remember seeing, what, about a month ago, was it, or something like that, or 6 weeks, something like that?
About 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go and check in a minute. I'm just in the kitchen.
There's more to it, but I just sent you, I made the files real small so I could put them in an email.
Okay.
But I did it for your benefit.
Yes.
Because it involved Jim Fetzer. And I know that you would enjoy it because of Jim Fetzer. Okay?
Well, in a twisted sort of way, perhaps, yes.
Well, we're all sick. Anyway. here's what I discovered quite a while ago when I was downloading all of Fetzer's radio shows from long ago.
Right.
Ernst Sundel, that guy that went through all kinds of shit in Canada and wound up going to jail in Germany for 7 years.
Yeah.
He's the guy at the Colostrum and everybody follow, Radical Press, everybody follows him. He's the big time revisionist, okay? Well, as soon as he got out of jail, the one guy he wanted to talk to was Jim Fetzer.
Oh, how interesting.
He thinks Jim Fetzer is greater than sliced bread. Now, this is an old radio show from years ago.
All right.
And I was going to upload it in my archives and provide you a link to it just so you could listen to the whole show.
Right.
But in the meantime, I just took a couple of little snippets because I wanted to tease Canadian politicians about it.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, he just gets out of jail and he has to talk to Jim Fetzer, and he thinks Jim Fetzer is so smart. And they're born within 1 year of each other. One 1939, one 40.
I see.
And they lick each other's asses for a while.
Yes.
And Fetzer goes on and on about how he was captain in the Marine and how he supported his brother being a draft dodger, et cetera, right?
Right.
And Ernst Sundel talks about his life and times. It's a two-hour show. Anyway, in the middle of the show, Ernst Sundel tells him a story I found hard to believe, but I immediately checked, and it is true.
Yeah.
Ernst Sundel, when he was in his 20s, and he's a very talented graphic artist.
Yeah.
Even in his 20s. He come over from Germany in his early 20s and could hardly speak English, and they give him a job just because they didn't want some other company grab him. He's very good at what he did.
Yeah.
So, because his business was somewhat seasonal, like for catalogs and stuff,
yeah,
he had a great deal of time on his hands. So, he got married, had a kid, and was going to college. Anyway, in his late 20s, he was going to McGill University, and he was editor of the local paper, and he was talking about politics, press, present, and future. And he's still only a German immigrant. He never was a Canadian citizen. But he was married to a Canadian and had a Canadian child, okay?
Right.
So in 1968, our Prime Minister, Lester Pearson, got cancer.
Right.
So he had to step down from office. So they had a leadership convention, and whoever became the leader of the Liberal Party was automatically the Prime Minister.
Right.
So they had 29 candidates. Who doesn't want to be Prime Minister, right?
Right.
So the field got whittled down to 7. One of them was Ernst Sundel.
I believe you told me this before, but carry on. I can't remember all of it. Yeah, go on.
Well, Ernst Sundel, 29 years old, who had lots of money, toured the country, got his face before the media, stuck with it, and when they had the convention and they had 7 candidates on the stage where they vote into who's the leader.
Yeah.
There were 30,000 people in the auditorium, and it was televised cross country. And this is in 1968.
Yeah.
And he couldn't be Prime Minister of Canada. He's not a fucking Canadian citizen.
Yeah.
He wasn't properly vetted. He shouldn't even have been a candidate.
Right.
Coming. But anyway, he got up on the stage and he spoke on national TV in front of 30,000 people. Okay.
Yeah.
He was known as the Dark Horse candidate. Paul Hellyer, who you met.
Yes, I did.
Was on the stage. He was running for leader of them. Liberal leader.
Okay.
Paul Hellyer, by the way, is making the waves big time over here over UFOs.
Yeah. Really, I know, yeah.
Did you know that he is the second oldest member of the Privy Council office?
No.
I mean, the Queen's Privy for the Privy Council offices in all countries. The Privy Council is the Privy Council. Do you know who the oldest is?
No idea.
Your hubby, Prince Philip.
Prince Philip?
Is the oldest member of the Privy Council.
Hmm.
second only to him is Paul Hillier. Paul Hillier's like 90 years old.
Yeah, he's up there, certainly. I didn't think he was 90, but maybe he must have just turned 90 recently, has he?
Damn near. You know, my mom's 90. He's damn near 90. Prince Philip is the oldest member of the Privy Council. Paul Hillier's second.
Yeah.
Prince Philip wants to come back as a virus and kill us all.
Yeah, I know that. I'm quite familiar with the machinations of Prince Philip, yeah.
Hillier was Minister of Defense, Minister of this, Minister of that. He ran as leader for the Liberal Party in 68. He ran leader for the Tories. He founded his own party. He is privy because he's the oldest member of the Privy Council. He's privy to every fucking secret in the British Commonwealth. And now that bastard only wants to talk about UFOs. He doesn't want to talk about what he said about banks. Nothing.
Yeah.
And I know you have an interest in UFOs.
I do, yeah.
But no discount to you, but that crazy old bastard yapping about UFOs is deferring everything he legitimately said about politics and banks.
I can believe it.
By painting it with this UFO whitewash.
Yeah, that's probably, you know, he may have struck a deal if he's in this, if he's connected with these sorts of people that you're telling me. Well, he is connected, obviously, but, you know, maybe that he's cut a deal with them to use that as a distraction. You know?
It's not a deal. He always was part of the deal.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, but that's
the Privy Council office does all kinds of subversive things. Like, they don't need an act of parliament to do anything. They just buy
right.
The Privy Council.
Right.
They're the ones that got rid of the mandate of the Bank of Canada without having any legislative nothing, no discussion.
I see.
Just got rid of it, right?
Yeah.
They create a via rail. They do all kinds of things subvertly, and nobody says anything because members of the opposition, everybody's, anybody of any consequence is part of the Privy Council, and the Privy Council is like a star chamber, more or less.
Yeah.
And what they say in Parliament really doesn't matter.
Right.
It's what's decided in the Prime Minister's office and the Privy Council is what carries the weight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're all biased up to yin-yang by bankers and big corporations.
Yeah.
Because it was the bankers and the big corporations that put them in office, and they're just basically puppets of the greedy bastards, right?
Yeah.
It is true. But anyway... I got off track there. Ernst Zundel. As soon as he got off the stage, he immediately withdrew his candidacy. So anyway, he was revealing this to Jim Fetzer in the middle of a conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm going, wow. You know what I mean? And it's amazing how much Ernst Zundel knows about how the world works. Now, he has his right to denying there was a Holocaust, just as Kahlstrom does, right?
Right.
I don't take issue with that. I don't know, right?
Right.
That's, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I take a big issue if I know the guy's a lying scumbag.
Yes, of course.
Right? And, Ernst Zundel, in my humble opinion, just by him at 29 years old playing a game trying to be our prime minister, him not even a citizen?
It's dishonest, yeah.
Just a scumbag to me.
Yeah.
Huh? Ernst Zundel is all about Ernst Zundel, and Dave Amos is all about Dave Amos. But yeah. Only one of us are honest enough to admit it. Ernst Zundel pretends he cares about the world. Bullshit, eh?
Right.
Same with Jim Fetzer. Same with a lot of these folks, right? And
right.
I'm not saying I'm not all about David Amos, but at least I'm honest enough to admit it. Huh?
True. Well, you've said it before, and I'm sure you'll say it again.
Yeah. But anyway, it sounds like you're fixing supper.
No, I'm just, I'm kind of talking. I'm just putting some, all I'm doing is putting some pizza in the bloody oven, so it's not as if I'm complicated. I tend to multitask, you see.
Where's your wife today? Watching you?
Well, she's a bit under the weather, so I'm doing it.
Okay. You're way ahead of me. My wife hasn't talked to me in years.
Well, you never know. My wife might not want to talk to me in years. I don't know.
Some guys would consider that a blessing.
That's true. I mean, it's like the old joke, isn't it? Why do married men die before their wives?
Probably to seek relief.
Because they want to.
Anyway, there's interesting days all over the place.
I'm mad.
I've stuck my nose. I've been quite busy all summer, torturing. Yeah. And I've got some interesting responses. On a local level here in Canada, there was huge floods. And
really? I've had them in Colorado as well.
Oh, yeah. And in one particular town, the RCMP went into 1,900 houses and took their guns. And it was only in that town in the whole province they did it, and it happened to be where the leader of the opposition was.
Really?
And they got rid of the gun registry, so how do the cops know what houses had the guns in them? And they did, I think it was $3 or $5 million damage just to front doors alone, kicking them in.
Jeez.
So anyway, it's caused a huge scandal, but if anybody had read what I said when I ran for parliament, because it was written in the paper, the gun registry was always a big issue amongst us rural Canadians because we all own guns.
Yeah.
And I said, I've been raised with a gun and I won't pay 10 cents to register it. And the RCMP can try to come get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was quoted in the paper, right? So anyway, when Harper got in power, they finally got rid of the gun registry. But apparently the cops kept a hold of the record so they know who's got the guns and who don't.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was really strange. On June the 3rd, about 3 weeks before the floods, I'm in a spit and chew with this Zionist, Mr. Bacon Fat, who claims he can kill me at 1,000 yards with a 308, right? And I'm saying, you're the biggest bullshitter. There's no way you could hit anything with a 308 at 1,000 yards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an impossible shot, right? I know, because I have guns. I hunt. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he goes, you don't know about guns. I said, I know about guns, and I own my share, right? So I was talking about my hunting guns, right?
Yeah.
I said, I got a 308, and the farthest I ever shot a deer with a 308 is 300 yards, right? I know a 308 will go farther than that, but a reliable shot, I'd say, is 300 yards. Anything more than that's outside shot, right?
Right.
And I said, but a 270, I said, I got a BSA 270. It'll reach out and touch it 500 yards reliably. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I said, but fancy guns aside, when I go hunting, because most of the time you're hunting, it's 99.9% of the time you're just lugging the damn thing through the woods, or it's raining, it's cold, it's snowing, banging around in a truck, right? And
yeah.
If you got a $1,000 rifle, you're worried about scratching the goddamn thing, or getting it wet, or you have to clean it, or it's getting rusty, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So 9 times out of 10, unless I'm going hunting in a field, right? I will take an old British 303 that I had since I was a kid that I bought for $29, right?
Yeah.
Which is like a good all-purpose gun. Or if I'm going in the deep woods, I got an old Marlin 444. Because in the woods, if you have a high-powered rifle and say you're shooting at something, if the bullet hits a twig on the way to its target, it'll knock the bullet off track. Where a 4.44 is a big bullet, big caliber, heavy bullet. So it's like a fucking bowling ball. It'll just bore its way through the bushes, right? Now, it doesn't carry any distance. A 100-yard shot, the farthest I ever killed a deer with it was 100 yards, and I had to aim way high. But it's good for in tight quarters, in the woods. Like when you see a deer in there, we're talking 20, 30 yards away, right?
Right.
I said all this, and anybody who just read what little I wrote would understand that I've been around guns a long time. Right?
Yeah.
And I don't suffer bullshit about guns lightly. And some idiot says he's going to kill me at 1,000 yards with 308. Number one, if you were going to do that, would you announce the world that you were going to do it?
Yeah.
Number two, you can't do it anyway. So anyway, he sends all our conversation to the RCMP, but I sent it to them too. But he said he met Ann McClellan, who was the former Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Public Safety.
Yeah.
And she lives in his neighborhood in Edmonton, right? And he does work for the Department of National Defense. He does work for the National Defense, right?
Right.
And he does know Ann McClellan. Right? So anyway, he meets Ann McClellan, and he's showing her her letters to me, my emails to her, or email responses. And she said, I don't know who he is. She said, my help would be answering those letters, you know?
Yeah.
And she's looking at what I'm saying about her, because I call her Landslide Eddie. And she called me pathetic lick spittle. And that sounds just like something she'd say, right?
Yeah.
But she did teach my sister at law school, and her husband, and his law firm partner. And she is from Nova Scotia. I could give her a rat's ass if she's deputy prime minister on the board of directors of big companies. She's just another dumb maritimer than me that made good.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, he's discussing with Ann McClellan because she was former minister of public safety, who's in charge of the RCMP and guns and everything. And this is 3 weeks before the flood. You understand?
Yeah.
And the premier of Alberta is another lawyer, another woman, right? And she used to be a human rights lawyer, etc., right? Redford. And they all know each other. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Baconfat says, you know, he was locked up in the loony bin. Canadian law is such, you know, if you have a history of mental illness, they take your guns.
Yeah.
But you see, when they put me in the loony bin, all that never happened. It happened, but they lost the records, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he's going, how can he have guns? He was in the loony bin. And she's going, da-da-da-da-da. And then she's saying, she's speculating on June the 3rd, because I sent it to everybody. I don't know if I sent it to you or not. But on June the 3rd, she was speculating to this idiot at a meeting in Oliver Park where people are buying, like, farmer's market shit or something. She's saying the RCMP don't need warrants if they suspect there's illegal guns in the house. They can just storm the place. Anyway, he put that in a blog on June the 3rd. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, her buddy, Premier Redford, is the premier of the province. They're both lawyers, and this was said and published on June the 3rd, and it's there to be read today, right?
Right.
Who would know that there was going to be a huge flood 3 weeks later?
Yeah. Wow.
Who would know that the worst place to be hit, or one of the worst, was the riding where the leader of the opposition, Danielle Smith, lives? Right? She's a good-looking woman and a pain in the ass to the premier. And definite opposition to a liberal deputy prime minister. So, when they have the flood, they kick everybody out of town, and the RCMP go kick in just certain doors. And there's some houses they went back to three times until they found the guns.
Yeah.
And they said they were looking for people or pets. And they're going, yeah. You didn't need to do that. You had the Canadian Army. You had helicopters flying over with your infrared. You could look right through the house to see if there were people in the house.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, that said, big scandal developed over RCMP breaking in without warrants, taking guns that were completely legal.
Yeah.
And a lot of Alberta flooded, and they only did it in the leader of the opposition's hometown. Right?
Right.
And they kicked in 1,900 homes, so there was 1,900 pissed off homeowners.
Wow.
So anyway, I'm talking to Daniel Smith's assistant. He knows who I am. I'm exchanging. She has a town hall meeting. Now, the RCMP, as soon as the flood was over, replaced the boss in that town with a new guy. But I knew him. I already crossed paths with him the year before from another town.
Yeah.
Okay? So what the RCMP do, anytime a cop gets in hot water, they transfer him out, put a new guy in, and the new guy plays dumb.
Yeah.
Right? And they want to know who told the RCMP it was okay to ignore the charter and bust down doors and take guns. They want to know whose bright idea it was.
Yeah.
Well, I already know. 3 weeks before, the Deputy Prime Minister and the Premier thought it was okay to break in without warrants to take guns. Mr. Baker Vat published it.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The RCMP are hired under contract by the Premier. The boss, Dale McGowan, I've been fighting with him for a year of the RCMP, okay?
Yeah.
The Chief of Police in Edmonton is another former Deputy Commissioner of the RCMP, Rod Knight. I've been fighting with them about Mr. Bigfat, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a small matter for them to send a sergeant by the name of Brian Topham down to high water with orders from the deputy commissioner, who's backed up by the premier and a former minister of public safety, go get them guns. But it was just a political play to embarrass Daniel Smith.
Right.
It backfired. She had a town hall meeting. Right?
Right.
Before she had the town hall meeting, I had already set them up, talked to a lot of people, got responses. People went to the town. I even called people that were pissed off, and I told them, I know. They didn't believe me. Right?
Right.
I said, the key to it is a sergeant named Brian Topham. Right? I tell them straight up.
Yeah.
Sent them the information a whole month before the meeting. They all ignored me. Right?
Right.
And then the day of the meeting, I call the mayor's office, the counselors. They admit they know who I am, basically tell me to fuck off. The RCMP won't talk to me. You understand?
Course.
They have the town hall meeting, and it goes like ski whiff in a hurry and backfires big time on the premier.
Yeah.
Now, everybody's playing damage control. The deputy commissioner of the RCMP's lying, trying to say the premier didn't tell him to do it, da 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 da. I didn't say to do it. Nobody will say what. The prime minister, the Justice Minister of Alberta, and the Commissioner of the RCMP, all three, demand an investigation.
Yeah.
You understand? Because the Prime Minister supports the pretty little lady who's writing it happening.
Yeah.
He orders the RCMP to give the guns back.
Right.
That embarrasses the Commissioner of the RCMP, and you know he'd just pick up the phone and say whose idea it was, and he'd know. So yeah. What he did is he asked the Commission of Public Complaints against the RCMP to investigate. So what right. They'll take 2 years to investigate, and by that time everybody will forgot about it. Right?
Yeah.
You know, he's that pure and ethical by asking them to investigate. But he'd know with one phone call the score. Right?
Yeah.
He'd know if he read my goddamn email I sent him. Right?
Right.
So anyway, now they're lining up talking about class action lawsuits and stuff. So I'm talking to the lawyers and the representatives, right? And I send it all to the boss of public complaints against the RCMP and everybody else, right?
Yeah.
I get a computer-generated response. and I send it to Bob Paulson and everything, because I got three complaints going back to 2003 to them, yeah, where I've never got an answer. So I get this computer-generated response, and I'm going, how long do I have to hold my breath waiting for Ian McPhail to talk to? I talked to him as soon as he got his job years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just let it at that. About 2 weeks later, Andrew, I get this email from a real person.
Yeah.
2 weeks after I sent the email.
Yeah.
Asking me if I wish to file a complaint with the public complaints against the ICMP.
Wow.
And I'm going, now there's a sucker play if I've ever seen one. Because if I file a complaint now, they'll just delay me for 2 years.
Yeah.
And won't do a thing. They say they can't acknowledge my concerns because they're investigating.
Their investigation, yeah.
I responded back to him. I said, why don't you answer my first three complaints first? Right?
Yeah.
But I sent everybody the proof that I got a real person to respond to me.
Yeah.
Holy fuck, they're nervous now. Because there's one thing a lot of us hillbillies love. It's our guns.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I touched the nerve big time.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a good reason I should be quite careful, because...
That sounds like so.
Something like that could make me quite popular amongst ordinary folks if it comes out what I've been doing.
It could indeed.
You know what I mean? It just could be simple as that. Just people pissed off about kicking in their doors and taking their guns, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, that's, you know, that sort of thing. And taxes, two of the issues that are very close to people's hearts and pockets and stuff. And that's what they get most easily riled about.
Yeah, but in one town, and not a big town, 1,900 homes, doors kicked in.
It's amazing.
Leader of the opposition's town and Canada's richest province. It's kind of like wicked. Anyway, all that stuff, like I've been doing that since they had the floods.
Yeah. Right?
Which was the 1st of July. But it's just bearing fruit now. It's the middle of September.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's just interesting.
I'm just about to have our food now, David. So,
well, thanks for listening to me, and you say hello.
I'll post this audio on the website, and then
say hi to the family, and thanks for making it for me.
Yeah, no problem, and I will do.
You take care.
Yeah, I'll speak to you soon.
Toodaloo.
Yeah, bye for now.